Well, we're talking high technology and privacy with Mark Weinstein. His website, scruples.com, is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Now, welcome back to Coast to Coast. By the looks of things, Mark, people want to know about technology and privacy. Phone lines are going crazy here, so we'll get to them in a second. What are the demographics generally for these social networks?
You know, it started young. And part of the reason why Facebook is going to have its decline, and you hear this from kids every day, is they don't want to be on a site that their grandparents are on.
Or parents.
Although, remember, originally that's how it worked. You know, and this is what parents loved about Facebook, was they could watch their kids. So it really was parents spying on their kids and Facebook spying on everybody. And, you know, kids got wise, and then grandparents finally got into the act. And, you know, because, remember, when the premise of your company is that your customer is your advertiser, then, of course, your members are going to get, you know, disenchanted, disenfranchised, and pissed off, which is how we all feel about Facebook. They can't change it because we're not their customer. So, you know, the demographics now today, really every market segment, from, you know, from kids 13 and up, which is the COPPA law, you know, you have to be 13 or over to use Facebook or, you know, a social media company, even like Scruples.
True.
But it goes all the way up now because the late adopters, the mature market, the 60 to 80-year-olds, you know, and older, they're in.
All right, when do we see this Facebook decline? If it happens, it should start happening, right?
Absolutely. Now, first of all, it is already happening. They're just not reporting it. But there's a lot of evidential data. And all you have to do is talk to people on the street. You know, you're finding people say, well, I actually never used it. Or you're finding people say, you know, I'm over it. I'm looking for a fresh start. We see, you know, the Snapchat users moved away from Facebook. WhatsApp, why did Facebook buy WhatsApp and try to buy, you know, Snapchat? Because they want to buy their you know, longevity in the market. They see that, you know, Facebook really is and was a fad, and it is dying off. And what Princeton says is 2015 is really the year that we see it. And this makes total sense because it takes, you know, consumer behavior changes slowly. And then all of a sudden, when it's really ready and pent up, it happens quickly.
Well, that's a good, you bring up a good possibility because did anybody really, Mario, I'm not talking about professionals like you, but did, you know, most people see the possibility of a MySpace demise? I don't think they did.
No, right, exactly. And this is exactly why I think Princeton study.
Fox didn't see it when they spent hundreds of millions of dollars for it, right?
Right. It's over $650 million, right? He didn't see it. Murdoch didn't see it. It happens so fast, and this is how they modeled it. They said it happens like an infectious disease that spreads rapidly, and then suddenly it dies, and it's over.
And when it's over, it's over.
Right.
I know musicians, right. You know, we do what we call emerging artists on Sundays. We play music and bumper music for a couple hours from people who have never had a chance to have it played on the radio. So it's kind of fun to be able to do that. Almost all of them, Mark, have a MySpace thing for their music, but that's about it. I don't see it as a social network anymore. It's more of a almost like a free website.
Well, MySpace was bought by Justin Timberlake and his group for $35 million at the end after Murdoch bought it for over $650 million, sold it to Timberlake for $35 million. Timberlake reinvented it because MySpace music was the only thing that was really surviving. And that's all it is today.
Did they get their money out of it yet, do you know?
I don't know. There are not any reports on it, you know, because it's really private. So, but, you know, how many people do you know use MySpace even on the music side? I don't know anybody. Just a couple of people.
Just a few people who do their music, you know, when they send their CDs to us.
It's hard, George. It's hard to reinvent a brand when it's over, which is why General Motors, you know, ended up closing Cadillac. Not Cadillac. Closing Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
You know, getting rid of Pontiac. It's hard.
Ford got rid of Mercury.
Brand.
I don't think there's Mercury cars anymore. I think Ford got rid of them. Kept Lincoln, but Mercury's gone.
Exactly. You know, so really branding, and in our industry, when Facebook has been around for 40% of the life of the World Wide Web, they're really an old company.
That's an old company. That's true.
So, and they're not cool anymore. Remember, when you're not cool, You know, when the disease is over, when the fantasy is over, and remember with Facebook, after the ecstasy, the laundry, and everybody today is dealing with the laundry. If you're looking for a job, you know, whatever you've posted, whatever you've done, if you're not paying attention, you're not getting into colleges, you're not getting your job, you're losing your job, you know, you're ruining your relationships. I mean, you know, the wreckage of Facebook is really, it's an amazing legacy.
What about Twitter? Twitter's got some problems now. Same thing?
Well, here's the thing. Now, we didn't talk about this yet tonight. This is important to cover because, you know, Twitter went through this great IPO, and Twitter is in a stall, although young people are using it for this flash communication, instant, you know, being able to instantly communicate with each other.
Yeah, bang.
But Twitter is going to bring down this industry because Twitter doesn't have a profit. They're not going to make a profit. And 2 years from now, when Twitter is still not profitable, you're going to watch the next bubble pop in Silicon Valley.
Oh, boy. Watch out, huh?
So this is like 1999 all over again, and nobody's paying attention. And, George, you know how it works. When the press decides that the party's over and they start writing about it, then the party's over because they're going to put everybody in a panic.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Let's take some calls here for you. Let's go to Janos in Houston, Texas, east of the Rockies. Janos, go ahead.
Wow, getting started off tonight.
You got
I got a question for you, Mark. I had a kind of an odd experience happen. I have an Android phone. And at the top of the Android phone on the home screen is the Google browser, the Google search bar that's built into it. I was listening to a song on my iPod, not on an iPhone, not on my Android, on my iPod through my car stereo. And I decided I wanted to read the lyrics for this song. So I typed in three words into that Google search bar, and I know that Google auto-populates with the most common responses. The problem is the words that I put in were so vague, and it came up with the answer instantly. The song was This Must Be the Place by the Talking Heads. So I just typed in This Must Be, and it automatically came back with the place lyrics. And so what I'm wondering is the phone microphone listening to what's going on inside my car or the ambience around me so that it knew exactly what to pull instantly? Because that's such a vague term to put in. Is This Must Be, and it was instantly there.
Oh, Janos, this is really awesome. It's such a great question because, first of all, let's look at what Google knows, what Google is doing. So Google, as we know, when they mapped out the world, Google Maps, what they did is they stole everybody's, you know, passwords and their networks as they drove around the world, and they got fined millions of dollars in the United States and abroad for doing that. So, you know, right now I would say that they're saying that they're not, and chances are that this was how Google knows you and your interest in music. And so Google knows you so well that they knew that's what you were doing. Remember, Google knows you so well, and so does Facebook. They can predict how long your relationship is going to last with great accuracy. So, and Google, you know, Google now has bought Nest. So they now, you know, have access to all the thermostats and electronic controls inside our houses. And soon Samsung has, you know, the TV models coming out with cameras in the TVs. So the answer is, it's a great question. I think this one was just because Google already knows so much about you from your Android phone, from your Google searches, from your Gmail, that they know way more about you than you could possibly imagine, even more than you might imagine you know about yourself.
They probably have more information than the NSA does.
Oh, absolutely. Remember, where does the NSA get their information from?
Google.
So, you know, remember, this is how it works. So, you know, the NSA just goes in the back door or is in cahoots with these guys and gets the packet. This is the great thing about Scruples. Scruples doesn't have a packet of information to give the NSA because we're not tracking you. We're not spying on you. We're not aggregating any data. You own your content. You know, our privacy bill of rights is right on our homepage. But for Facebook and Google and Yahoo, you know, and most of the big sites, you know, they have this packet of information ready, easily accessible, easy to get hand over to the NSA.
What was the first big search engine? Was it AOL or Yahoo?
You know, it was really Yahoo. So AOL was really, you know, a chat space and an email provider. So AOL was really cool in that context. You know, it was the first place where we could, you know, we could chat with people, instant messaging.
Right.
And Yahoo was really the first, you know, search engine place.
So how did Google blow past everybody?
You know, Google really blew past them with this, with the technology. They figured out search. They figured out how to monetize search also. So they figured out how to create this engine, you know, the algorithm. This is where, you know, the genius of Google was being able to really serve you what you were searching for. And then, of course, as they got to know you, they could really serve you what you're searching for.
And you have to be on that first page if you're going to get any kind of hits, right?
Right, right. Absolutely.
Do you pay for that?
And, of course, it's all paid for.
Yeah. They pay for those spots, don't they?
It's all product placement. So, you know, you can't get a truly honest search from Google anymore.
If you have a website and you want it to be number one or two on the first page of a search, let's say you sell shoes, what do you have to pay Google for to get that spot?
Well, it's all product placement today. So it's all product placement. And so what you know, you've got to pay, it really depends on how popular and what the competition is. But, you know, the thing is that you can't do, you know, every site, every search is what we call curated. Just like Facebook curates your feed, when you post all your friends at Facebook, do you know that maybe if you're lucky, 20% of your friends actually see what you post? Because Facebook is curating everybody's feed and deciding what they're going to see. You don't decide what your friends see. It's not your post. You don't make that decision. Facebook decides if they're going to show your post to your friends.
Is there a computer that does that? Because surely you can't have a person sitting there at Facebook going through all
that's
this.
That's right, George. George, that's right. It's a person who designs the algorithm that then takes over and decides. This is, these are very sophisticated algorithms on what they decide you're going to be most interested in that ties into how they want to market to you and how the data that they need from you.
Absolutely amazing. First-time caller, Ed in Redding, California. Ed, welcome to the program, sir.
Yeah, hi, George. Great program, great guest. I'm all for this. I'm actually very low-tech myself, but I did have a comment about a book I just finished reading, and it was by Eric Schmidt and his co-partner. He's the CEO of Google. And it's called The New Digital Age. I don't know if you have read that yet, but it was chilling, the information in there. But my question is, because of the 1984 George Orwell, I should say, that was a wonderful book way, way back, you know, 50 years ago or so. And, of course, he made the point that Big Brother is watching. And, of course, from what you're saying and all the other technology going on, it's not just Big Brother, it's Big Brother and all the others around the world. This is an incredible world we live in, and I just want to know some comments maybe you might have, Mark. I'm all for your wonderful research and trying to help the younger people today, kind of guide them and warn them about what they're doing with their lives and their futures. And I just, that's my comment.
All right.
And I'd like you to get you to respond to that.
Well, Ed, it's really, the new digital age, the problem with the new digital age is, as we talked about earlier, that it has no moral compass, it has no integrity compass. And, of course, when you give a 15-year-old or a 13-year-old, a 16-year-old, the opportunity to post publicly to the whole world, that seems really exciting. And, by the way, Facebook, in the middle of all this purported, they're always puffing their chest about privacy and pretending to do something, but really, what did they do 3 months ago? Before, 13 to 16-year-olds could not publish publicly. They could only publish to their friends, but now they can publish to the world. Is a 13-year-old equipped to publish and to know content that they should be posting
no.
The whole world can see?
I don't think so.
Absolutely not.
They're smart technologically, but their little brains haven't matured.
Right, and Eric Schmidt, you know, I mean, look, with all due respect to Mr. Schmidt, right, guys, but do no evil as your mantra at Google. I mean, come on, you couldn't think of a better one than do no evil when, in fact, you guys are just data scraping the world. I mean, even to the point, as I mentioned earlier, that when they mapped out, you know, how you can get pictures of your house from Google Maps, when they drove around the world and created Google Maps, they stole everybody's password to every unsecured network everywhere in every country.
Yeah, let me ask you about Google Maps and Google Earth, by the way. Who runs around taking pictures of all these houses in every subdivision in the country? Who does these things?
This is a huge initiative that, you know, Google makes so much money because, you know, their search engine is so profitable. So, because as we talked about, everybody's paying for placement on any search you can imagine, on millions and billions of searches, people are paying for placement. So Google has so much money. So Google drove around in their cars. They drove around with these special radar devices and satellites above, and they mapped out the world. I mean, it was really an incredible initiative. The problem was it didn't have integrity.
Who's taking these ground pictures in the front of your house? Somebody's doing
Google.
That. I know, but do they hire some photographer?
They hire people to drive around in the cars and do all this. Absolutely, George.
That's amazing.
So they hire people to drive around the world.
What do they pay these people?
You know, that I don't know. But remember, Google is a cash machine of, you know, unbelievable proportions. So, and, you know, listen, you know, more power to them. I'm a capitalist. More power to people who can figure out how to make a fair and honest dollar. The problem is, don't tell me you do no evil, and don't pretend you're not spying on my Gmail, and, you know, stop treating me like a product. But at least Google tells us that. Now they've been forced to in the courts. Last summer in the courts, they actually said, our members don't think their emails are private. Now, that was a shock to the world because people
there
thought
was.
They were.
Everybody thought they were.
Right.
Corporations. I mean, I would guess, you talk about industrial espionage. Remember those old days where they tried to leak into companies to get information on the new products they were working on?
Right.
All you got to do is steal the emails now.
That's right. Google has data on everything. And, of course, that's what makes the NSA so interested.
And how did they use it? And, you know, here's the old saying, which I don't agree with. I'm not doing anything wrong. I don't steal. I don't do this. So I don't care if they have information on me. That's a wrong thing to say. But what do you say to a person like that, Mark?
Well, what you say to a person, and it's interesting because, you know, you've got a guy who you've interviewed who answers that too, is number one, is that privacy actually is more important than you ever imagined, because when you take it away, then we are living in a censored society where we're not achieving either our wisdom or our genius, where we're protecting everything that we do and say, and we're not free people anymore. And then we're not in the United States anymore. Our founding fathers said, this is the way it has to be. And if it's not, then we should have another revolution to bring it back.
That may happen, Mark.
So, you know, George, privacy is a fundamental right. It's fundamental to our genius. It's fundamental to our creativity. It's a fundamental right that our founding fathers, when we created, this is the greatest country ever in the world, and they knew it. They knew how important privacy was to our safety, you know, be able to, you know, say what you want, practice the religion that you want. For law-abiding citizens, privacy is critical. It's also critical to our, you know, how we ascend and how we invent and how we create. So it's far beyond, I don't have anything to hide. You know, almost, you know, every American has nothing to hide. Most of us are wonderful people.
Mark, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Wow, you know, I just came back Sunday from Denver where we taped our Beyond Belief television programs in a snowstorm. Middle of May, freezing weather, got down to about 29 degrees in Denver. Global warming? But, I mean, unbelievable. Anyway, Beyond Belief, of course, is our weekly television show, and you can watch it for free for 10 days. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com. It is a rapidly growing television network. I'm telling you, very fast. Last week, the highest subscriber rate that I've ever seen. Beyondbelief.com. Welcome back. Mark Weinstein with us. So, Mark, in terms of the future for some of these social networks, Beyond Scruples, which you may be a trendsetter here, it doesn't look bright for them, does it?
Well, George, especially if you've been acquired by Facebook, like WhatsApp has just happened, and then, you know, yet you've built, you know, your membership on trust, and then Facebook acquires you, your credibility goes away. So this is an evolving industry. So, you know, Forbes said Scruples is the next generation of social media. And what we've done is attempted to design something that has lasting power because it's really based on how we really communicate. Jonathan Wolf, who's the co-founder, is a neuroscientist and a color physiologist. And, you know, I have a background in sociology. And we want to design something that is the way we communicate naturally based on real life. Now, moving into the future, you know, we're going mobile, right? So
we are.
But there's something, George, something's going to happen. And I want you, we're going to predict this here tonight on your show first.
All right. Here we go.
Okay. So here's what's happening next is personal clouds. So, and that's not the prediction, because that's happening, and Scruples is a personal cloud. You know, your photos, your videos, your documents, they're all in one place. It's a control dashboard where you control where they go in the world, and you share them privately, and you've got control over everything, including deleting. So, but what's going to happen is, you know, a private cloud like Scruples is great because, you know, we don't own it, and we're not spying on it. But the other clouds, that people are moving their documents and all these things to, you know, they're going to encounter the same mistrust. They're going to be, you know, worried about, are they spying on me, et cetera. And this movement away from desktop computers to storing things on the cloud is going to change. Here's what I predict, George. 5 years from now, we are going to cycle right back to having desktop computers in our houses. We're going to hide all of our important files right in our homes, and we're not going to let the cloud get near it.
Really?
Yeah.
So away from the mobile phones generally, back to your computer.
Well, we'll still use the mobile phones, but we're going to stop. We're going into the era of the cloud and the era of the personal cloud where we're going to get used to even not worrying too much about where our documents are stored at home anymore. We're not worried about big hard drives in our computers. We're backing everything up on the cloud. And we're going to reverse that trend, and we're going to come back to storing our photos and documents and videos right in our homes, and the only thing we're going to share to the cloud are things that we just want to share. We're not going to be storing stuff up there.
Maybe pictures of the moment or something like that.
Right, right, exactly.
Let's go to Andrew in Portland, okay? Andrew's in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
Hey, George, and hey, Mark. Excellent program tonight. I'm a college student currently interning at a software startup building security solutions for mobile devices, and I heard the show, and I just knew it was meant I had to call in. I mean, I've been listening since sixth grade.
This was your night.
And so basically, your guess is absolutely right about how insidious some of these companies like Facebook and Google are with the type of erroneous activities they perform on your cell phone. And most people, when you ask them about this, they'll say, yeah, that might be going on, but I don't have anything to hide, like the example you provided earlier. And the truth is, I mean, that's easy to say, but it's really those permissions that they're granting that are wrong. Just because they have the ability to do something is wrong. I mean, there's over 40 risky permissions for Facebook alone. And when I uploaded the app on my phone and ran the software, it loaded my data to over 300 IP addresses around the world overnight.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And Andrew, what I think is happening, even, you know, with your generation and the generation below you, the younger people, is that, you know, at first we gave our privacy away and we thought it wasn't important because we didn't really realize. You know how you don't realize what you have until it's gone? And now, and this is where the media is doing a great job of letting us all know, hey, wait a minute. You know, actually, privacy is important, and people are starting to think, wait a minute, I got nothing to hide, but, yeah, my privacy really is important. And I think we're seeing this. You're probably seeing it. You know, you said you're working with a security startup. You're probably seeing a change where 2 years ago, 100% of your friends didn't care, and today 20% of your friends care, and next year it's going to be 40%.
It's going to grow. There's no doubt about that. Leanne is in Farmington, Maine. Welcome to the program. Leanne, go ahead.
Hello, George.
Hi.
Hello, Mark. I am not online except with a little old MyVo 100 mail station, which your caller, their call screener, rather,
yeah,
didn't even recognize what the term was. It's that old.
Yeah.
And he's I got rid of my cell phones last year when our government voted very narrowly to continue surveillance of them. I figured that my calling my aunt out of state long distance was none of the government's or anybody else's business, whether I had anything to hide or not. Now, I told one of my friends years ago, don't let Google go putting me on their map. I don't want it. So she informed them for me on my behalf that I did not want it. I find I'm on their map.
You're on the map.
That's another thing Google's done.
Sure.
So I just wonder what else they've got on me. I'm not even online except for that little MyVo, and I don't have a cell phone.
We'll have all. Leanne, I already know your address. I was typing it while you were calling. I'm kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I'm kidding. You know what, though, Mark? That's possible.
And George is kidding, Leanne, but we could do that. We could type in your name, and, you know, we'll get your address. We'll find your city. And the problem is that, and this is Facebook, too, they know all about people that aren't their members. And so, you know, you can do your best to hide, but there's certain data that's still public, data that, you know, the county records office has that's public that has now been, you know, digitized and put online. You know, data about, you know, your mortgages and data about, you know, where you live and all kinds of things. So this is the new reality. And what we have to do is make sure that where we can, we take our privacy back.
What has the Internet, Mark, done for private investigators? Where in the old days, they had to really physically go search for everything. Now they can do a lot of it just from their office.
George, you know, of course, this has been a boon to private investigators and anybody researching anything. If we're interviewing somebody for a new job and we want to investigate them, it's easy to find them and track them. It's hard. You know, we all have digital footprints today. Even our caller like Leanne, who, you know, is not on the Internet at all, she has a digital footprint. And so what I tell people, George, is, listen, you want to be part of the world today. You want to be part of, you know, an active member in society. So don't shy away from this. Just make your voice heard. Tell people you want your privacy back. You know, help make the right decisions. You know, make your choices correctly and make sure that we're taking our privacy back. Also follow the court cases that are happening because the Fourth Amendment is real and we want to support all the court cases that are going on, you know, in resurrecting that Fourth Amendment.
Oh, boy, if the Founding Fathers were still around, they'd be rewriting everything, wouldn't they?
George, say that again?
Our Founding Fathers, if they were still alive, they'd be rewriting things like crazy.
Unbelievable. You know, the Fourth Amendment is such a beautiful amendment and it's so clear. And yet, like anything, you know, we can interpret it, you know, in so many ways, but it's very clear what it says.
Let's go to Charlie, Augusta, Georgia. Hello, Charlie. Welcome to the program. You're up with us.
Hello. Two quick questions. One, why is the Supreme Court eviscerating the Fourth Amendment regarding people's privacy? And you're alarming about upgrading from Windows XP. What's a safe non-Microsoft alternative? And thank you so much, Mark.
Fourth Amendment and Windows XP, Mark.
Well, you know, it's really hard to understand the different judges that are talking about the Fourth Amendment, and you know, to figure out why one judge says that, you know, we've got to protect it and everything that the NSA done is a violation of the Fourth Amendment, and another judge says no, it's fine. It's not fine. You know, the Fourth Amendment's very clear about what it says. And so, you know, we've just got to make sure that we are watching and supporting everybody as they, you know, we take this. Now, in terms of, you know, what are you going to use? I mean, really, you have two things you can use. Now, strangely enough, Google Chrome is really good for security, for keeping hackers out of your computer. But the problem with Google Chrome, you know, the problem with Google Chrome is that they're spying on everything you do. This is where earlier we talked about Firefox. Firefox is a very good choice as a browser. That would be the browser that I would recommend. Mozilla is a great company, and Firefox is the browser you want to use.
I'm going to read the Fourth Amendment, Mark, to everybody so they all have it.
Great.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Boy, that's not happening. They're taking everything.
Right. And, George, you hear how clear that is?
It's spelled right out.
Right, right. These guys, you know, our founding fathers, the forefathers of our country, they were so clear in what they wrote here. So it's like, how can we interpret this in any other way but that we have this unalienable right to privacy, you know, unless we've really violated the law and proper judicial process has been followed to search us?
We have Steve in Los Angeles now. Steven, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Ah, good evening, gentlemen. I miss the old days when TRS-80s ruled the earth and 300-baud modem, BBS systems. And I'm still looking for a secondhand crayon Craigslist.
I love it. I love
it. Yeah, anyway, the question, if you had any information on that monster Google Bard that's being constructed, I'd hear all kinds of conspiracy theories regarding it.
It's like a huge Google storage place, isn't it, Mark?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't have any good, you know, comments about the Google, you know, barge yet. I mean, you know, listen, Google wants to know everything about all of us. You know, it's interesting. Google and the NSA very much have the same mission. So this is why, you know, Google can do what the NSA can't. Google can buy a company called Nest and now have access to everything about how what we're doing inside our houses, when we're turning the lights on, what we're doing with our temperatures, you know, et cetera. So Google is really, you know, it's hard to say right now what, you know, I don't really understand these barges. They're calling them interactive learning centers. It's just hard to say right now what the heck is really going on.
We go to the home of Walter White now in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Deborah's with us. Deborah, you know who Walter White is?
No.
Okay, I'll tell you later, but go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I actually had to call back. My phone got disconnected after 40 minutes.
Oh, no.
So I got through again, so thank you.
Sure thing.
This is the dilemma. I received a bank email. It was fraudulent, and I knew it was from some other passwords being changed. So I called the bank and confirmed it's a fraudulent email. They asked me to send it, and I send it, and I end up with CryptoTracker. And I don't know, Mark, if you're familiar with CryptoTracker, that hijacks all your data, encrypts it, and wants a ransom of $300 or $400.
Ugh.
I took it to Computer Tech. He tried to fix it. I tried to fix it. At first, I've been in IT for a while, and he couldn't do it. So he called some of his corporate friends that are in security, and they said they had a case where they decided, what the heck, pay the ransom. You know, they didn't think they were going to get the key for it. They did get the key. In 15 minutes, they made them pay it in a Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin was like $600 at the time. The ransom was like $300. They even got their difference in cash back in the Bitcoin. And is that the only way that someone can get their data back? I have no access to any of my Word or Excel documents.
What a pain in the neck this is. Mark, what does she do?
George, this is what we were talking about before, about hackers and about the Internet and what's happened. It's good guys and bad guys now. This is where crime happens. You know, there's all those these denial of service attacks, these DDoSs, distributed denial of service attacks on machines and networks. And then this is what they're doing. The ransom is in Bitcoins. And so for our listeners, you've got to be really, really vigilant. Don't click on any link that you are not 100,000% sure is valid. Just don't do it. Call your friends and say, did you send me this? Call the bank and say, did you send me this? Because once you're in a DDoS or, you know, any kind of, you know, hack attack like this, you're vulnerable. And remember, you know, you take it to the police, take it to the bank, but they can't figure out who the hackers are. And in some ways, you're at the mercy of them. So, you know, I can't really advise you to pay the ransom. That would be inappropriate for me to do. But you want to consult with your experts and make the best decision you can make if you can't get your documents back. And for everybody, back up your stuff every week, every day. Back it up.
Unbelievable. If somebody gets your routing number and your checking account number, they can do ACH grabs on you, can't they?
Well, you know, George, remember, those numbers are on every check that we write. So the banks are savvy to all this. The banks have got great, you know, security perimeters. So they can see when, you know, if you haven't authorized the withdrawal. The bank is going to protect your account because we're still every day writing, you know, physical checks that we're mailing, paying bills. So I think we're still okay there. You know, our banking system is really great.
Well, let's hope so. A couple minutes to go. Let's take one or two more calls. We've got Alex in Pleasanton, California, west of the Rockies. Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just seeing if you guys have heard of the Made Safe Network. That they just did an IPO with Bitcoin. Basically, they're going to do cloud storage that will be kind of the same basis as Bitcoin, except it'll be it'll be just as secure as like getting a Bitcoin.
I have not heard
information.
Of them. Have you heard of them, Mark?
Yeah, George. So I haven't studied them too carefully. The Made Safe guys, you know, it's they're calling about distributing data, encryption, cryptography, you know, and it's really almost like an open source initiative. So it's something to watch. You know, again, even on the Bitcoin side of things, we've got to watch this very carefully because, you know, these are unregulated initiatives. And we have to see, you know, how consumers, everyday consumers, can adopt things like this. So it's something to watch, and it's something to watch and see if it's actually taken over by good guys or taken over by bad guys.
What changing times, Mark. I don't know how you keep up with all this.
George, you know, it's really exciting, right? You know, look, what an amazing time we live in. You know, your show, the things that you get to talk about and study and learn about every day. What an amazing time to be alive. You know, they're saying that we, the amount of data we consume, you know, in a day, a week, and a month is more than people consumed almost in a lifetime, you know, a few hundred years ago. And it is a lot of data to keep up on, and it's changing, and we've just got to stay with it.
All right, great. Good luck, Mark. Thank you so much. Up next, we talk about precognitive dreams on Coast to Coast AM.